Mandy Alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 29th, 2006. And I have a sponsor and I sponsor others. The lady I've asked to speak for me tonight has flown all the way from New York. She truly is an amazing woman. There was a time in my life when I thought I didn't have anybody and I didn't really have much desire to go on. And she was there for me. And most of all, she was honest to me. She told me things about myself I didn't know. And she told me things I didn't really want to know. But she's really been there for me. And with that, I give you Miss Cheryl Lamb.
Well, hi, my name is Cheryl Lamb. I'm an alcoholic. I will celebrate 12 years this November. I have a sponsor, as you guys say. She has a sponsor, and I sponsor girls. And actually, I am back in Florida now. I live in West Palm, but I was in New York when I talked to Mandy. Congratulations on your time. You know, I sit out here, and I look at Mandy, and it is amazing what this program can do. I just watch her turn into this most incredible young lady, and I'm so proud of her. She took this program and she ran with it. She listened to what she didn't want to listen to. She did what she didn't want to do. And she has stayed sober and become the beautiful young lady she is today. I had a great speech in my head last night, and of course now it's gone, and I don't drink decaf, or I don't drink coffee, and I had coffee, so now I'm like, ah! I'm so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. It has taught me how to live a life that I could not figure out when I was younger. I could not figure it out. When I was going to school, in the beginning I loved school. I was a good student, and I wanted to be a marine biologist. I'm born and raised here. I've been in the water, in the ocean my whole life. Love everything about it, and that was my true passion of what I really wanted to do. Well, around 13, I picked up my first drink. And that liquid started to take over the passion of my liquid of the ocean. I too, like, you know, when you have that drink, you just feel it in your toes and it comes up in that warm feeling and then the, yeah, this is great. And that happened for me as well. And then, of course, I threw up all over the tent because we were camping with my family and they threw me out and I slept out in the rain on, we're down in the Keys and in this chair. And the next day they're all out diving and, you know, I'm dying in this chair and I think, wow, that was awesome. I can't wait to do that again. Of course, that was gin, and I never drank gin again. But there's nothing after that I didn't try. I always say alcohol took my dreams away from me. It took my ambitions. It took a lot of my friends, and it took, I guess, that inner peace that I had when I was a kid. Once I started drinking, I don't know how or why, but I started to develop this hole. And maybe it was always there, but I really didn't notice it. And then it seemed like once I started drinking, when I wasn't drinking, there was just something missing, and I was always trying to fill it. And for a long time, I tried to fill it with people. I remember when I was in school, again, I was a good student. I'm going to jump around on you guys, so keep up. You know, I love school. I love going to school. But then once I started drinking and doing other things, I started skipping school. And because I love the beach so much, I thought it was more important to hang out at the beach, drink Beck's beer, play backgammon, and watch the boys. And because I didn't go to school enough, my grades started going down, and I started thinking I was stupid. So if I'm not that intelligent, why bother going to school? Because I'm not going to pass or do well anyway, so I might as well just go hang out at the beach. And, you know, I kind of ended up being a beach bum. And as that hole inside of me grew, At first, I tried to fill it with boys, you know, and that didn't work. And then I started drinking a lot more. And then I had a boyfriend. And because I drank and went home at night and was in a blackout and didn't take my birth control pills, you know, I ended up pregnant at 15. And I thought that was great. My mom had become an alcoholic when I was 15. And my mom was my best friend. And she crossed that line. And I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I had no clue. All I knew was that my mom was no longer my best friend. So now I'm pregnant. And I'm thinking, great, I'm going to have a new best friend. And my parents figured it out. And they made me abort that baby. So that hole just grew even more. Now I've lost my mom as my best friend. I've lost my child as my best friend. So what do? You drink some more. I did not make it through school. I just, again, I lost all my ambition. School was not important to me. Filling that hole, having fun. My brothers are 6 years older than I. So I decided, you know, I wanted to hang out with them all the time and do what they did. And that's what I started doing. You know, next thing I know, at 19, I'm pregnant again. Same thing. Drinking all the time, going home, not thinking about it. And this time I had that child. In the last month, I gave her up for adoption because I realized that her mom was going nowhere, her dad was going nowhere, and she deserved something. And that was the first moment of clarity I ever had in my life. Where that came from, I'll never know. I wanted her more than ever. Her nursery was set up. But out of nowhere, I got rid of that selfishness and self-centeredness and decided she deserves more, and we found her a great family. That happened to me one other time in my most drunken stupor. I used to live on a yacht, and we were in Atlantic City. Normal day, hanging out. We were at Donald Trump's. They have a marina. There's a nice deck out there. They have bands. You know, it was just a great, mellow afternoon, and I go off the Richter scale as usual, and I end up getting mad at my husband because, you know, he's boring because he doesn't drink like me anymore because he's tired of the way I drink. So we end up getting into a fight. The first public fight we'd ever had. There was a person that came out of me. I had never seen her. I had no clue who she was. She scared the daylights out of me. And I ran to the boat, locked myself in a bedroom, and thought, oh, my God, I can never come out of here. He came down later that night, and for whatever reason, another moment of clarity came to me. For the previous 5 years, and this is AA, I'll stick there, but I had gotten back into drug addiction, and he had no clue. I had been living a double life. And for whatever reason that night, when he came down into that stateroom, I sat up, and I just spilled my guts and told him everything I'd been doing. I didn't know what to do, how to, you know, I just had that moment of clarity again that I just didn't want to live my life that way anymore. So, of course, knowing that he was going to hate me, I got up the next day. I called my brother in Florida and said, put me on a plane, get me an attorney. I'm coming home. I'm sure I'm getting divorced. And, you know, that didn't happen. My husband was my biggest supporter. He still is today. He loved me. He took care of me. He drove me to treatment. We cried the whole way there. Of course, once he dumped me there, he wanted nothing to do with me for a while, which was okay because that was my 2 weeks of vacation. When it came time for me to find my way, I knew nothing about treatment. All I knew was it was a place that you go. So I'm thinking, okay, I hate my job. I'm sick of my husband. You know, I'm just tired of doing what I'm doing. So I'm just going to go and have a vacation. And honestly, for me, it was, if there's anyone in here that is either in treatment or you get a chance to go, it's a privilege. Don't sit there and complain about it the whole time you're there, because not everybody gets to do something like that. It is a privilege. Make the best time of it you can. Learn what you can. Come out and change your life. But AA is free, so you don't have to do that. You can stay in here. In fact, I'm curious. How many people in here have under a year? Awesome. How many people in here have over a year? Sweet. If you're new in here, don't leave. Hang on to your seat. relapse is not a requirement. When I came into treatment, I never even heard about relapse. I didn't know it was an option, thank God, because I probably would have tried it. I was taught you come in, you sit down, you don't drink, you get a sponsor, you do the steps, you go to AA meetings, you help other people. And if you want to drink, you pick up that phone, and no matter what, you don't pick up the drink. And that's what I stress to my girls. And, you know, so many people I meet, and they're like, oh, well, you know, I can relapse and come right back in. I'm like, you might not. You might drink, you know, get into some trouble and die. You know, you just might not make it back the next day. What I do today to keep myself sober is a lot. I do more today than I actually did when I came in, and that was a lot. I work with sponsees. Unfortunately, I am not working again in this economy. And the day that I lost my job, I went to Intergroup and volunteered for 2 days. I'm a DCM in my district, so I started visiting all my groups, which is awesome. If you ever get a chance to get into service, I highly recommend it. It's fun. Well, that's really why I got in it, because it was fun. First time I was a GSR, and you got to go away on quarterlies. I was like, heck yeah, I'm out of here. And then I got there and realized you had to do stuff. I was like, ooh, I don't know that I like this anymore. But I got hooked. And I learned that by giving it away and by helping other people, it helps me. It helps me have a more fulfilled life than I did before. I'm not used to speaking this long in a while. I came in here, I had a high bottom. You know, you hear about bottoms. And thank God you can choose to get off whatever floor you choose. I came in with a spiritual bottom. I still had the great career, the cars, the boats, the husband, the family. I really, my drinking wasn't out of complete control yet, but other things were. But I was so dead and empty inside that I used to get in my car and get on I-95. I would fill my car up. At an SUV, I would fill it up with gas, and I would plan what pole in the middle of the highway I was going to smash into. And I figured if I had a tank full of gas, hopefully it would explode and, you know, I wouldn't have to survive. And I would, like, go all the way down to Miami trying to get the courage. I'd have to get off, fill my car up with gas again, drive all the way back up to West Palm. It's an hour and a half drive. Why I never did it, I don't know, but that's how I lived my life for a long time. Looking for a way, planning a way to kill myself, but not having the guts to do it. Thank goodness. I will be honest and say that I have been in the exact same space in sobriety. You know, life has just kicked my butt sometimes. My last 2 years, oh my God. You know, for a while I was saying, God, what are you going to do to me next? I stopped saying that. Don't say that, because he will show you. I have lost careers. I've lost my mom. I've lost my home. I've lost so many things that I really didn't want to wake up the next day. I was like, if this is what sobriety has to offer, I'm not interested. And what is amazing is that happened to me even while I'm still active in AA. I saw my sponsors, my sponsee. I'm still going to meetings. I'm still doing everything I'm supposed to. So I'm thinking, what is this about? I'm working hard. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, and my life sucks. And that was when I became closer to my God. I had a God of my understanding before then, but when life really started hitting me upside the head, you know, I felt like I was the batter and the pitcher just hated me and just kept beelining me with that ball while I was up to bat. I just dug in deeper. I dug in here, into that hole that was still there at that time, and I filled it up with my higher power, which is God, and I started to use it, and I dug in deeper, and I started working with people harder. And I was taught every time somebody got up to get a white chip, you go up, a woman, you go up, you say hello, you give her your phone number. If it's a guy, if no one has gotten to him yet, congratulate him, show him to another person. I just started doing that even more. I made business cards. I was handing them out to everybody and then praying, please, dear God, somebody call me. And my phone started to ring. And it started, you know, it started to work. So I'm coming out of my 2 years now.
Yay.
Nothing has changed. I'm still not working. I've still lost everything. I just spent a week in a hospital with my dad out of nowhere. And, you know, it was okay. It was so okay. My phone rang off the hook from people in these rooms. People went and took care of my animals because all of a sudden I was like gone for 24 hours and it ended up being a week. And I felt so blessed. Number one, I was able to be with my dad. If I had been drinking in the last 2 years with everything that happened, I would have had that excuse to just drink and drink and drink and be on that pity pot, which I still like to go on to on occasion, and not be there for anybody. Instead, I was able to be there for everyone who needed me. I was still able to be for, you know, be there for my sponsees. And, you know, what a blessing. It's like every time, like when I lost my first job, it's like, what could be worse than that? And I was up in New York when that happened, and I lost my job, and I lost a family that I worked for 7 years, and they still are very, very dear and close to me. And I also lost, you know, where I was living. And I had to come back to Florida, and came back to nothing. But I went right into service. I went right to a district meeting. I grabbed a commitment. I started going to groups. I just buried my butt in AA. It has saved me so many times. And for the most part today, you know, there's a smile on my face. I love sobriety. I have fun. Go see Mark L. He's absolutely fabulous. I saw him the very first show he ever had, and now he's just incredible. Do all the things that you hear in the announcements. Go out. Have fun. Do things. Meet people. I'm never home. I am never home. I wasn't home when I drank. I was a bar person. That's where I wanted to be. I wanted to be out with people, having fun, and I'm the same way sober. You know, I still want to be the life of the party. I want to find every party. I still go early, stay late. But it's okay today. You know, I can drive home. I don't have to do this, which is great. Before, I guess it was a couple years ago, quite a few of us went down to Miami to go bar hopping for a night. And there was nothing better than driving home at 5 o'clock in the morning, stone sober, after having the best night, thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to get a ticket. I'm not going to get a DUI. I'm going to make it home. I get to look out both my eyes and have a conversation with the person next to me all at the same time. I mean, it's just great. And I try to live my life that way today. I try to find the good in everything. I give everybody a benefit of the doubt. I trust everybody until you prove me otherwise, and I'll still usually give you a second chance, which I learned how to do all that in here. You know, it used to be if you said something to me or you did something that I really didn't like, I just didn't hang around you anymore. And today, if you say something I don't like, I go home and I really think about what you said because it was probably something I needed to hear. It was probably something that you saw in me that I don't see yet, but I need to hear it. And if not, and you're just off your Richter scale, then I just ignore it and still talk to you the next day. I'm going blank. Wow, that's a first. Anybody who knows me would be like, no way, Cheryl, who can't say something. I'm glad to be here tonight. It was nice. I haven't been here. I moved away in June of last year, and I hadn't been back since. And driving over here just brought back a lot of good memories. The time I was over here, I made such incredible friends. And this group by far welcomed me the most, welcomed me first, made me feel at home, made me feel loved, made me feel special. And then I met another group, and, you know, they took me in, and they did all the same things. And it was so nice to call everybody and tell them I was coming over. And, you know, I get to see people who are so near and dear to me. When I lived in the bars, people were happy to see me, I would suppose, but I didn't get that warm, fuzzy feeling like I do today when I come in and somebody's eyes light up and they go, "Hi, how are you?" Or I see somebody and I get excited to see them, even though they wouldn't speak for me. But I went to the old church. No one told me you moved. So I'm nice and early. I'm waiting. I'm like, "God, where is everybody? They're usually here by now. They're hanging out front." I'm thinking, I wonder if they moved. I don't have a cell phone right now. I'm like, "Oh no. Well, I guess I'm going to be a no-show." And I'm thinking, "Oh my gosh, I can't do that. You know, I can't do that to Mandy." And there's a bunch of kids in the parking lot. And I go, "Do you know where there's an AA meeting that used to be here?" And they go, "No." And I'm like, "Oh." They go, "But there's a meeting down the street." And I was like, "Okay." So I pulled up and here you were. So that was a relief, but I guess Tiffany was on the hot seat for a little while there. So when I came in, she comes up to me. She's all excited to see me. I'm like, "Yes." And then I find out it's because now she doesn't have to speak. It had nothing to do with me. That's not true. It's a sweetheart. I'm going to cut this short. That is pretty much all I have. If I can give any advice, hang on to your seat. If there's anyone in here tonight, I don't care if you have 2 days, 2 years, 20 years, and you think you might not make it this week without a drink, please don't go drink. Please pick up that phone. Call your sponsor. And if you don't have a sponsor, get one. So important. And if you don't have a service commitment, get one. And if you don't have a home group, get one. And if you don't call people, start calling them, because you will drink most likely if you don't. That's my experience. It's what I've seen my girls do. I love it when they call me 3 days later. They've been out on a run for 3 days. And I'm like, "Didn't I teach you to call me first? You know, not afterwards." Don't take this disease lightly. Don't. It's it doesn't take us lightly. It's there. It wants us miserable. Some say it wants us dead. I don't think it wants me dead. I think if I went back out drinking, I would live to be 98 years old, that little old haggy lady under the bridge, toothless, you know, barefoot, cut up. I mean, it would be horrible. If I knew I would go out and die, it wouldn't be scary. I don't think that is my demise. So there's no way I'm going to live the rest of my life that way. I would much rather live it happy, joyous, and free. Working with other people, staying active, going to conventions and quarterlies and all that stuff. There's nothing like going to a quarterly and seeing 700 people, and you actually know half of them because you see them all the time. You might not know them intimately. You might not know all their names, because I never know anyone's name. But I know your face. I know where you're from. I know kind of what you do. And I know you're an alcoholic like me. So I know I can sit down and talk to you even though I don't know you. And we're probably going to have a pretty cool conversation. So I thank you for having me here. Thank you, Mandy. You're just an angel that came into my world when I needed one. You can do the steps without ever seeing a person by pen and paper. We were separated. We were not in the same town. And we did the steps via mail, 5 and 6 pages at a time, writing back to each other. And it worked, you know? It worked. So there's that's a tough way to do the steps, you know? That's a hard way. And she did it. And she was just my angel when I needed her there. And it was such a joy and such a pleasure to work with her. And it was such an honor to be here with you tonight. Thank you.
Bob's last message, delivered at the First International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio, 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over this vast sea of faces like this, with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and all and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if someone hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get to the degree of smug and complacency that we are not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us, to our less fortunate brothers. Thank you very much.